Is going on, ladies and gentlemen. It is episode 21 of the Ring Psychology Podcast. It's me, it's your boy JP. Alongside me, as always, Bill the Thrill. And
what up, dudes?
What did we come up with last time?
Swole Troll Nick, I think.
Swole Troll Nick. For the originator, it's Big Nick. What's up, Big Nick?
I can't wait to make a t-shirt that says Swole Troll Train. Swole Troll Train. Man, that's a tongue twister there. Swole Troll Train.
Say 10 times fast.
Swole Troll Train.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have been gone for about 2 weeks since episode 20, which was...
That was the predictions
for Double or Nothing.
Right.
Well, predictions champion.
I'm pretty sure.
Double or Nothing. Once again, it was close. But weirdly enough, it came down to a tie between Nick and Bill.
Oh, cool, man. It's like CM Punk and Cena holding a belt together. Sweet. I'm Punk, though, so yeah.
That's kind of what it turned out to be. So I guess
I won because of the women's match.
You did.
I picked that one.
Fuck it. Tiebreaker. We're giving it to Nick.
There you go.
Is that supposed to be trivia? Oh, well, I'm trying to think of a game we can play right now to. You know what? Sure. I feel honored and like it took me 3 or 4 tries, and I appreciate the honor. It's all mine. No one else has done this much work to get to this point. So F you all, I'm champion. I'm not letting go. I'm going to make every prediction for the next year and a half. I'm going to hold this belt as long as Becky Lynch did, and I'm going to retire when I get pregnant.
There you go.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, since the last time we talked, a lot has happened throughout the world. We've gone in, or at least with the All-Pro Jaffos on the other podcast, we've gone to extensive talk about everything that's been going on. I guess to kind of relate what's been happening in the news, the New Day, when they came out on SmackDown, came and did their kneel, fists in the air in solidarity with Black Lives Matter, which I thought was pretty cool. I didn't necessarily think, considering WWE's kind of stance on a whole lot of things, that they would even allow them to do that. But I think at that point, I think Kofi and Big E, whether they allowed them to or not, I think they were going to do it anyway.
They did release a statement, what was it, a week ago?
I hadn't seen WWE's statement. I mean, I've seen John Cena. I've seen, like, individuals and stuff like that making statements, but I have yet to see Vince McMahon himself basically come out and say anything.
I mean, everyone was releasing a statement. Nike, WWE, The Ringer, Trader Joe's released a statement. It wasn't a good one, but they released a statement. I mean, everyone was just had to. It was like an obligation for them to save their company a bit. But yeah, WWE definitely made a statement.
Well, WWE, I think, was one of those companies that kind of had to make a statement on where they stood because, again, Vince McMahon, you know, the ties with Donald Trump and all that kind of stuff. Linda McMahon is in the cabinet, you know, so I think it was one of those situations where people really did want to see, hey, okay, we know your past. We know where you guys are at right now. What do you think about all this? You know, I hadn't seen the statement. I'm sure it's there. I hadn't seen it necessarily myself. I hadn't seen Vince McMahon come out and publicly say anything himself. I don't think he will, to be completely honest. but regardless,
I don't think he needs to. I mean, no.
I think if anybody in professional wrestling should show some sort of solidarity, and it would be a powerful statement, it would be Vince McMahon. If Vince McMahon came out and said, hey, you know, black lives do matter, we have black superstars here, great performers, you know, comes in and does all that, I'm sure that would be something huge, not just for the fan base, but for the wrestlers themselves. They'd be able to look at Vince McMahon with even more respect, you know, than they already have for him. So I think it would be big if Vince McMahon came out and said something. Again, will he do it? Time remains to be seen. You know, so we'll see how that goes. We'll keep that on track of that, because that you can believe if Vince McMahon came out and said something, that's going to be big breaking news throughout the whole, you know, wrestling community. AEW came out and made a statement. They did their intro and everything like that for their show. Was it last week or 2 weeks ago? That they had put, you know, a little montage and everything like that for the whole movement. So that was cool to see from them. But yeah, in the wrestling world is kind of one that's not, it's mainstream, but not as mainstream as like football, baseball, basketball, you know, the big time sports and stuff like that. So that's why, but when everybody, if you're not a, like a true wrestling fan, it's like a casual thing. Vince McMahon's name is synonymous with professional wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, like I said, if he comes out, says something, you know, it would be big, you know, but we'll see how that goes. In the meantime, New Japan came out and announced that on the start, June 16th, which is, what was that?
3 days.
3 days from now, they will be hosting or having the New Japan Cup 2020. The bracket preview that they got here so far, they have Toji Makabe versus Yota Tsuji, Tomohiro Ishii versus El Desperado, Toru Yano, or Yano versus Jado, Tamaki Honma versus Hiromu Takahashi. So
we're not gonna be able to pronounce them.
Yeah, there's. So basically, the whole tournament, the first round brackets go from the 16th, 17th, 22nd, and 23rd. And then the next bracket from the 24th and the 1st of July. And then after that, 2nd, 3rd, when the whole thing, the final is going to end up being at Osaka Jo Hall on July 11th. That will be the finals match. So from,
that's really a whole Dominion every year.
So from June 16th all the way till July 11th, which is almost a full month, New Japan will be having the New Japan Cup, which is pretty exciting. We've seen AEW, we've seen WWE going and doing their thing. We haven't heard a whole lot from New Japan because, you know, Japan was struck pretty hard by the virus and the pandemic and everything like that. So it's good to see them kind of getting back on their feet, getting ready to do shows. Now, the question is now for them, are they going to be doing basically what WWE and AEW has been doing, like empty arenas or, you know, small, you know, groups, maybe the other superstars surrounding the ring watching, you know, how they're going to do it, you know, remains to be seen. I'm pretty sure they're not going to go overboard and we're going to, you know, Osaka Jo Hall can hold a good amount of people, you know, so I don't think they're going to fill the stadium. I don't think that would be smart on their part, but it'll be cool to see. It'll be cool. New Japan is one of those that people always kind of assume before AEW came around with Kenny Omega and Okada going at it with their rivalry and all the good stuff that New Japan was doing, people were looking at New Japan being that legitimate competitor to WWE. But then AEW came around and, you know, we are where we are now. So it'd be cool to see during this whole pandemic to see what New Japan will finally come out with and be able to showcase all their talent. Thoughts, guys?
Bill, you can go first.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good move. I'm really excited to see what Japan's how they've dealt with and what they're doing as far as reopening for business and things like after this. You know, after they're pretty much ahead of us on the curve of going through it, and see if they actually are going to have a live audience is kind of going to be interesting, or what type of live audience, what that'll look like for this event. It'll be interesting to see. I'm looking forward to seeing it, and hopefully they'll get some airtime in America somewhere, because I don't know if they have any domestic TV contracts or plans, but it would be good to see them, see their wrestlers, the performers back on TV. It'd be great.
It would just be great to have wrestling, like pure wrestling again, because there really hasn't been outstanding matches probably since WrestleMania, maybe even since Wrestle Kingdom. There's just been a missing part to artistry for a while, and title runs specifically have been diminished. Like Naito's whole run has been paused, and you just hope they can get back on track with his title run. If he may lose to Kenta, and they just say, yeah, we're starting over because we don't know. The virus messed up a bunch of stuff, and there's also title reigns in WWE that are being diminished. And everywhere else, but specifically with Japan, I mean, they had to close down everything. This was the worst case situation for a specific major wrestling company, is that they just, there was nothing to do. And now I'm glad they're back. I can't wait for Kenta versus Naito. I can't wait for Guerrillas of Destiny to win the tag titles for like the 12,000th time, because they always win it back and they hold it for so long. Can't wait for Okada to do something, Ibushi, Jay White, and what the possibly returning members of Bullet Club. I mean, there's going to be so much for Japan. They're going to be on their feet in no time, and it's going to be great wrestling, and I can't wait.
Yeah, I think with New Japan, it's for me, it's just good to see, you know, wrestlers being able to get back into it,
yeah.
You know, being able to do what they want to do. You know, I'm sure, especially superstars that are in the indies in New Japan, watching AEW and WWE kind of do their thing, I'm sure they all have that itch to go in there and just put on a good show, something spectacular, you know, and given New Japan's history, I definitely wouldn't put it by that they're going to have a phenomenal New Japan Cup. We're probably going to see things that are innovative. we might see some character changes, you know, storyline-wise. You know, people may be going on a different route. Kota Ibushi, I'm excited to finally see him back on TV, to be completely honest.
I want more of Ospreay in the main event scene.
That would be cool. Ospreay and Ibushi, that would be cool to see. I definitely would not mind seeing that. You know, but it's good to have wrestlers, you know, getting back to doing the craft that they love to do. You know, so hopefully New Japan keeps you going, makes sure everything is fine and protocols taken, I'm excited for them to be putting on some good matches. So we'll see how it goes.
What match do we all look forward to the most?
Huh?
What match do we all look forward to the most?
From New Japan's?
Yeah.
Well, give me. I just had it up here.
Well, let's not look at the cup. Let's just make.
Oh, just somebody that. Well, I would say anything Ibushi and Okada for me. Like anything that those guys do is going to be, in my opinion, phenomenal. So Okada and Ibushi definitely too. Ospreay is another guy that I'm I'm kind of eager to see. I thought he would be I thought he would be one of those guys who would kind of make the jump at this point, you know, to WWE and or AEW.
He likes the Japan culture.
Yeah, he does. He does. But that's what. But when you're talking about work wise, you know, I'm sure a lot of these guys were not content with just sitting at home doing nothing. I'm sure some were, you know, taking a break from doing, you know, bumps and all that kind of stuff. I'm sure it was good for the body, you know, for them to be able to take a couple of months off to, you know, relax, you know, get the body back into where it needs to be and stuff like that. But I honestly thought Will Ospreay would have made the jump at that point just to continue working. But the fact that he, you know, kind of stayed behind and stayed with New Japan is kind of speaks volumes about the guy, you know. So he wants to help New Japan, and he's even come out and said it. He wants to help New Japan become a top player in the wrestling business, and he's well on his way to doing that. So,
in the American market, they're probably always going to be number three now because AEW. So unless something massively happens,
well, do they have a TV contract in the States right now? What are they going to be shown on?
I don't think they do at the moment.
They don't. So you're talking third place or third promotion in the States, say Impact or, yeah, probably Impact, because no one else has any kind of real, you know, Ring of Honor is a joke. We know that. And New Japan doesn't have a home right now on American TV. Until they do, they're not going to have that. They're not going to have that presence. I'd like to see them be the third promotion in the States. I'd love to see them be right there in the pack. But until they can get a good contract deal, a good TV deal with someone major that can push them nationwide.
But globally, they are the third most popular company, or at least in America.
Right. To most of like the true wrestling fans and stuff that actually pay attention to more than just AEW, WWE, like, you know, the indies and stuff like that. Yeah, everyone at that point looks at New Japan and goes, oh yeah, they're definitely the third, you know, the third company up there that everyone's excited about. But like Bill said, when you're trying to get to the casual audience, you can't do that without, you know, being able to showcase what you got in the States. You know, if you have no cable deal or TV deal or whatever, it's very difficult to, you know, yeah, YouTube, there's that. You know, that right. they can hit. They have their own, basically their own style, like WWE Network. They have New Japan World. You know, they have all that kind of stuff. But
what channel was?
They were on Access.
No. What channel was Lucha Underground on?
They were on.
El-Ray.
Yeah, El-Ray Network. Yeah, for a minute.
I wish we would have their camera angles again. I don't know. That was just awesome.
Their production was top notch. It was really good.
Yeah. Chavo Guerrero has that Guerrero money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The big Guerrero money.
Yeah.
I was thinking that maybe at some point, because you haven't really heard, I mean, not even since the pandemic, even before the pandemic, you haven't really heard too much about Lucha Underground. Well, because a lot of the top stars that they had
left.
Yeah, left for AEW or WWE. You know, so it's kind of – I thought that they were going to end up meshing with either AAA or CMLL. I thought they were going to mesh with one of those two and kind of go from there. AAA would have been the more ideal thing because they have a partnership with AEW. So
– Underground's done.
Huh?
Underground's done.
Well, I know it's done, but what I'm saying is for them to have been able to stay alive, if they would have kind of been under AAA's wing or CMLL's ring, like CMLL presents Lucha Underground or AAA presents Lucha Underground, kind of had that sponsorship, you know, with one of those, I think they would have survived. But at this point, obviously, with the pandemic and all that kind of stuff, it was kind of one of those – all right, how many of these indie companies now are just going to go bankrupt? How many of them are going to survive? How many of them are going to come back? It still remains to be seen how many of the indie scene promotions are still going to come back. You know, we don't know yet. You know, so I'm sure they will come back, but
You know how bad it is for companies? Jamba Juice took out juice out of their name because they can't afford those extra letters and word. So now they're just Jamba. I saw this the other day. It was crazy. They're losing money. So
that's literally what the reason why they made it Jamba?
No, I don't know, but I saw that. Oh. I was like, "Whoa, what happened here?" I
mean, because they're doing more than just juice. They want to get into more than just juice, so that's why they want to come out with a whole line of different things, snacks and foods and stuff that aren't just juice.
Well, most of the general public always calls it Jamba anyway.
Right, absolutely.
I call it Jamba Juice because it says Jamba Juice on its name.
Yeah, but I mean, it says Jamba Juice, but when everyone talks about it or whatever, they always say it's Jamba.
Well, I did.
It's kind of a marketing thing to kind of change it.
Gosh.
Huh?
They did approve it with Nick, so it's not working.
They didn't talk to me during this survey.
We need Big Nick's approval here. If we don't have his approval, nothing should pass.
I'm going to troll Jamba Juice on Twitter now.
That's hilarious.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, so New Japan's coming back. That's great. It is Saturday, the 13th. Tomorrow is, or maybe at least one of the matches is anticipated, in my opinion.
Tomorrow is Sunday.
Tomorrow is Sunday, and Backlash.
That means Monday is coming after that.
Huh?
That means Monday is coming after Sunday.
And that means Monday Night Raw.
And then it's what's on Tuesday? Is there anything on Tuesdays anymore?
I don't think so. Wednesdays, you have NXT, AEW, back to Friday, Friday Night SmackDown. But yeah, nonetheless, we got Backlash 2020 coming up tomorrow. At this point, we're going to do our prediction slash preview of the entire card. We've got seven matches on the card so far that I see right here. Opening match, or at least this is what this is the list by ESPN. I'm just gonna go down by the list they have here. They're starting off with Jeff Hardy versus Sheamus, which probably gonna be another pre-show match, to be completely honest with you.
I don't think so. That's gonna be a real opener. If anything, the pre-match will be a Cruz and Andrade.
Yeah, but they're not even on the card.
Yeah they are.
Oh, they are. Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. The United States. There we go. I see it now. You think they would put Jeff Hardy versus Sheamus on the main card over the United States title?
Yeah, they do it all the time.
That's a shame. Like, if you're going to have a belt, at least put some prestige behind the belt. If the United States title is just going to be a pre-show title, just name it the pre-show title. How about that? You know, Joe?
Yeah, that's the 24/7 title.
It's just
the cruiserweight title.
But Jeff Hardy versus Sheamus. Let's go down the line. Bill, we'll start with you. Jeff Hardy versus Sheamus, who are we picking?
Well, first off, I think it's bad booking because you got both those guys coming back, and now you got one of them's got to take an L. Unless somehow the feud's been good. I like the feud. I like the heat and the back and forth. Some pretty good segments. I think I'm going with Jeff Hardy, but I think that's a bummer that they put those two guys in a feud, a high profile feud, so quickly after returning, because one of them's got to take an L and lose momentum. And unfortunately, I think it's going to be Sheamus losing that momentum. I think Jeff Hardy's getting the win on that one.
Okay.
Next. I don't like the segment at all. I think Jeff Hardy has gone through these personal storylines too many times now that they need to do something more creative for him. But they're going to continue with it because that's what Jeff Hardy does seemingly once a year now. So I'm going to say Sheamus, they're going to keep it going for maybe 2 or 3 months because it's the coronavirus and there's nothing better to do than just rehash every rivalry for so long. And too long.
Okay. I'm going to go with Hardy. Just because I think they're, you know, the whole, you know, guy was, they give his storyline, obviously, in a whole, basically, this is kind of his whole redemption run type of thing. I do think that they should probably keep this match or keep the rivalry going because, like you said, there's not a whole lot for everyone to do, you know, so to kind of keep that going until things get into more normalcy.
Hardy and Sheamus is not a good mixture.
Yeah, Hardy, when I saw this was getting put up, you know, I kind of had the same idea that Bill had, you know, both of them are coming back, you know, you wouldn't usually put two guys who are returning at relatively the same time against each other, you know, so it's kind of one of those like, well, shit, now you're kind of killing the momentum of some, one of the guys that came out, you know, that's coming back, you know, but I do think they'll keep it going. But I do think Hardy is going to come away with the win here. Next on the card, United States Championship, Apollo Crews versus Andrade. Nick, we'll actually start with you on this one. What do you think?
They'll have Crews keep it a little longer, and maybe Andrade will go into something more interesting. Probably not, but it'll be a Crews' belt for 2 months.
Okay. So what we got?
The least most relevant titles right now.
Yeah, I'm going with that. I'm going with Crews. I think they're giving him a push, and so far I like what I see. His in-ring work has always been solid. Now he's got some promotional time and some face time on TV. He's doing a pretty good job. I think, to be honest with you, I think he's probably cutting a little bit better promos than even Braun Strowman at this point. But Crews is pretty solid, and I hope they keep the belt on him for a while. Andrade can do just about anything. You can put him in, insert him in any kind of feud with anybody. He's such a solid, amazing wrestler, and I just love seeing how he can keep to develop that and develop the storylines going. It looks like him and what's his stable partner's name? I can't think. Angel Garza. Mm-hmm. They kind of showed a split on the last Monday, I think it was. And they might end up going at it, you know, going into the rest of summer, maybe into SummerSlam, because Angel Garza is a good worker too. I think he did some really good shows and some good matches out of those guys. So Crews is winning, I think.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Crews too. I think he's gonna hold on to it for a little bit, show what he can do. He's got all the athletic ability in the world to be able to.
It's crazy.
So it's just a matter of him being good on the mic and the storylines that they put him in. Like you said, Andrade, I think he's going to be in that feud with Garza. There's going to be that little inner faction war thing that kind of is going on. Zelina Vega is going to be kind of torn between them and that kind of
right.
So they're going to have their own storyline.
You'd think Charlotte, with all her power, would tell creative to put Andrade in something better.
Well, I mean, maybe it is. It's just, it is a little bit better for him. Because let's be honest, his U.S. title run wasn't the most.
He looks good with a belt, though.
He looks good with a belt, but not the U.S. title belt. No. You want Andrade to be somewhere around, like, the Intercontinental title. Or, you know, some, like, a bigger title that he can pursue. So he'll have this little feud with Garza, and then at some point, you know, he'll go and maybe fight AJ, you know, for the Intercontinental title or something else. You know, whatever it may be. I don't know what it is that they're going to have planned for him, but.
I want him to fight Rey Mysterio again. That's the only way I'll enjoy watching Rey right now.
Well, him and Rollins are having a pretty, in my opinion, kind of a decent little promo thing. I think this is definitely building up for Dominic. I forgot where I read it from, but there was a little theory going around that I guess Dominic was going to be turning heel on Rey.
Oh,
you know, to join Seth kind of stuff. I saw that and I was like,
stupid.
Do they want to go down that road? I don't know.
I don't want Dominic in WWE for at least 5 more years. I want him to go through the indie scene.
Well, I mean, he's been training under Rey for the last, 5-10 years now? He hasn't been on TV. He hasn't been, you know, obviously in a show. He's proven he can take a bump, you know, fucking getting demolished by Brock Lesnar. You know, it's just a matter for him to kind of get in, be able to show what he's worth. The Rock, you know, he came in. Everyone's calling him Blue Chip. You know, he's the son of Dwayne Johnson, everything like that. You know, he wasn't necessarily the most popular superstar coming out when he first started, and look what happened to him. You know, so I think you give Dominic a little bit of a chance to kind of see where he can go. You're not putting him – you're actually would be kind of putting him in a good situation if you team him up with Rollins, because then he can learn under Rollins.
Absolutely.
To get better, whether it's a heel or, you know, to get better on the mic, whatever it is that he's going to do. But I do think that Dominic could potentially be one of those, you know, second, third generation superstars that comes out and does well. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with him. Next match on the card. The greatest wrestling match ever of all time.
You're doing this already?
That's what they're calling it.
Can we do that last? That's a long discussion we're going to have on that match.
Okay, so we'll put a pause on that one.
Talk about the three-way WWE Tag Team Women's match.
This is, again, one of those situations where why are we having more than two teams? You know, they were doing it for the men's, you know, having the triple threats, fatal four ways, all that shit for the title. Why is it a necessity to have three-way matches for tag team belts? I don't think it's something that they've basically been doing for the last, what, 5-6 months? Even before the pandemic was happening, they were doing these matches. And it just kind of goes to show you AEW's way ahead of the curve when it comes to tag team wrestling, at least. You know, it almost looks like when they put Sasha and Bayley as the tag team, women's tag team titles, they were trying to, I guess, give a little bit of credit to the belts. Problem is, they're putting them in three-way matches. You know, it's just, in my opinion, I don't think that needs to be done. They need to focus purely. If you're going to be having three-way matches like that, you might as well have trios. You know, a trios title or something like that going on. If you're going to have a three-way match, you know, more people in the room, whatever the hell it may be. To me, it's just frustrating to see that they keep turning tag teams into these triple threat, you know, fatal four-way style matches that one of the teams or two of the teams or whatever, you know, has no chance in it. They're just kind of giving them, you know, some TV time. It just, I don't know, man. If they want the tag team division, both male and female tag team divisions, to do well, triple threats and fatal four ways are not the way to go. That's not the way you want to handle it and the way you want to do it, because you're basically wasting a team.
Well, you need legitimate competition. Iconic is not legitimate competition right now, and neither is Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. It's their tag team isn't strong anymore. They're just bland. And so is Sasha Banks and Bayley. They're bland as well. We've been going back and forth with that tag team or that group for so long now. It's not that interesting.
I think with the Iconics, they had to, when they came back, they should have had to go on a little bit of a run, you know, with matches, you know, have three or four matches that, you know, they were either dominant or they did come out on top, for them to be thrown in, you know, to a title match basically this quickly. There's no real buildup, you know, to it. It's just, I don't know. I mean, my choice to win, I think Sasha and Bayley are going to retain. Like, I don't think there's really any question about that. And I think that's one of the problems. The fact that it's so easy to really predict who's going to come away with the title. Yeah, it just, you want to have two tags and teams in there that makes you sit there and think, going, damn, who could win the titles here? This tag team has a chance. This tag team has a chance. What are they, you know? But I think this should be the pre-show match, to be completely honest with you. But I mean,
we should give an award for pre-show prediction. No, like what match should be pre? Never mind, forget. Yeah, Becky, no, Sasha Banks and Bayley.
That's where you're going, Nick.
Yeah, it's very predictable.
Bill?
Okay, I'm going with Iconics, and I think that it's going to set up the breakup between Sasha and Bayley finally. I think the reason why they gave them the belts in the first place is one thing. I think to award both of them for doing a pretty good job, especially Bayley. I thought, you know, I'm quoted on saying on here that I thought she was a reluctant heel when she first turned heel, you know, a while back, a year ago or whatever. I thought it was pretty reluctant of her. I think she didn't like that position. She saw herself as a baby face and a hero, and just like she said in the promos. And when they turned her heel, when she turned heel, I thought she did it reluctantly, and she did a pretty good job. I like some of the work she's done. Her whole heel character with the Karen haircut is just perfect. It's really working. It works up. It ticks the box for me, and I enjoy when I see them do their little promos. I think it's going to be a setup for the breakup. I think one of them is going to take the pinfall. They're going to lose their belt to the Iconics, and then it's going to hopefully start their rivalry little feud that can even go all the way the rest of the year into next year's WrestleMania. We'll see though. But I'm going with the Iconics. That way we got a three-way tie here. We get some kind of.
So the next one on the match, the handicap match for the Universal title, Braun Strowman versus Miz and Morrison.
Putting my money down for Miz and Morrison to win because I want it to happen.
So is that your official prediction?
That's great television, man. That's what we really need during the quarantine is some dumb stuff like that.
Is that what your prediction is? Are you going to?
It's my hard-on prediction.
All right. I'm going to start by saying that I really do like Braun Strowman. Follow him on Instagram, some social media, and I think he's a pretty interesting dude. I think he's got a lot of character in his print, who he really is. But he is obviously being handed promos to memorize, and he does them like a robot. And it's embarrassing, and it's frustrating, because they should have given him this belt a year and a half ago. And instead, they forced it on during quarantine. His promos are stiff. He's got no crowd to play off of, which I don't even know if that'd make it any better. I'm not sure. And I like him. I like his character. I like who he is. He's got a great look, great vibe. But you look at the two main guys right now with McIntyre and Strowman, and McIntyre's killing it on promos and killing it in the ring. And they're putting Strowman in a stupid handicap match, a pay-per-view. It's ridiculous. Now my prediction is he's going to lose. I hope Miz and Morrison get it because, like you said, Nick, it'll be a little more fun. It'll be more fun, and we'll have some fun TV to keep us occupied during all this shit time we're living through. But to put that belt on Strowman, it's just awful because it's just not working, and I feel bad for the guy.
What's the show that Miz and Morrison do? Their gimmick show.
The highlight reel.
Highlight reel. No, that's Jericho's thing.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's
Miz TV, right? Miz and Morrison TV or something like that.
You know, it doesn't matter. But that's gonna be great television. That's all I'm.
Exactly. Yes.
I'm gonna go with Braun, just on the fact that I'd.
Ooh, even better. Imagine Bray Wyatt comes back in the Fire Funhouse, and we have Miz and Morrison in that little Fire Funhouse. Ooh, that would be so much fun.
They're not gonna waste the Fiend on that.
Can we have a Fire Funhouse match with the Miz and they go through his real world time period?
No. No. Braun's gonna take it again because they're just gonna show Braun's a monster. He's this and that. He's, you know, who's gonna take out the Universal Champion type of, just build him up to be this big old, you know, monster that nobody can beat, and then Roman's gonna come back and beat him.
What they can do to make this interesting is do the Brock Lesnar esque match where the little guy gets ahead, but then Braun beats them up. But since there's two of them, this could make it for Braun's focusing too hard on one individual, and the other one comes in and kicks his butt. He goes back and forth with now two rather than just a one-on-one match. This is quite intriguing. If it happens that way, it may not, probably not. but where they this could actually be an intriguing 4.5-star match if built right.
Yeah, the logic that WWE Creative has, not there.
It's Bruce Pricard now.
They don't have that type of logic right now.
It's Bruce Pricard now, man.
Which, in my opinion, they chose Bruce Pritchard over fucking Paul Heyman, which
Paul Heyman didn't do anything.
Well, I mean, what do you do right now?
We're still talking about how upset we are.
I don't know. I think at this point, you're kind of getting a product that people are glad it's there. It's something to entertain them, something for them to watch. But right now, WWE is getting really stale, really fast. It really does seem like these pay-per-views are just regular house shows. Like, there's no build-up behind it. There's no, like, excitement going into it. There's nothing like that right now. So it's just kind of, I think they're going to, like I said, they're going to keep it on Braun. They're going to make sure that he goes in, whenever Roman does decide to come back from all this, he's going to come back, he's going to fight Braun, he's going to win the title. You know, as he probably would have against Goldberg at WrestleMania. You know, so I think that's kind of the obvious thing that they're going with it. As much as I would love it for them to put it on Miz and Morrison to, you know, have some sort of different entertainment to go with it. You know, are they going to have two different belts on the same time? Are they going to share the belt? Are they going to, like, Freebird rule it? You know, one person fights for the belt against this person matchup, kind of like the New Day, what they did with their tag titles. Sometimes you'd have Kofi and Big E, other times you'd have Xavier and Kofi or Xavier and Big E, you know, all that kind of basically depending on the matchup will depend on who fights type of thing. That'd be pretty cool to see. Logically, are they going to do it? No, they're not going to do it. They're not that far ahead thinking right now. Right now, they're just trying to – it just seems like they're just trying to get out of this whole pandemic era, go back to normalcy, and then they'll start to really kind of ramp it up, you know, for the crowd. But until then, yeah, I think Braun's going to be holding on to the title for a little bit. After that, we have Raw Women's Championship, Asuka versus Nia Jax.
They should make some stipulation to this match. Whoever loses gets fired.
Nah.
No? Okay, well, I thought it was funny. Well, that was dead. So quiet.
Crickets.
Yeah, that one's just... And this is another one because...
We've seen Nia Jax
versus Asuka, but we're over here thinking that it's supposed to be a feud between Charlotte and Asuka. That's why this kind of I look at it and go, okay, Nia Jax is just in that filler position, basically. She's definitely not going to win the title. In my opinion, Asuka goes over.
Absolutely.
For sure, 100%. There is no
– Well, I already know.
I can lock it down to a guarantee. This is it.
We already know what we're going to get next month, and that's going to be Charlotte and Asuka. So this match doesn't even matter anymore. It's going to obviously be Asuka winning. Nia Jax got in trouble again. So here we are.
Some people were saying that she needs to go back to NXT. I was like, yeah, well, they look at NXT now as a main roster brand. They don't look at it as, or at least Triple H's words, they don't look at it as the developmental brand anymore.
Right.
You know, so.
Right.
Bill, I'm assuming you're going with Asuka?
I am going with Asuka, but let me just touch on something real quick. Did you see the reports yesterday and today about what's the little developmental indie promotion that WWE's connected with?
Evolve
might be going out of business and WWE might pick them up. That'd be a great idea for to keep Evolve as their true developmental. Now that NXT's trying to push into the main, you know, the main part of the.
I mean, I thought they already did it on a portion of card. because you.
They're failing. I don't know though. That's true because the report I read it said they're failing financially, not being able to do shows, and that WWE is looking possibly into picking them up and buying them. That send her there. Send Nia Jax somewhere because she is dangerous. I don't like her. I don't like her. She's horrible in the promos. She's another one that you can just tell she's reading a scripted promo that someone gave her. She can't be herself. She can't be who she is. She's got to be what they want her to be, and it's not working. It didn't work for me. I don't think it works for most viewers. And so, it's going to be Asuka. Asuka's going to win it, and then she'll go on to maybe feud with Charlotte. I think it'd be at least a good match. At least you get some good stuff out of it.
I think with Nia Jax, a lot of people's kind of like defense or something like for her. She's a bigger girl fighting against, smaller women, these types of injuries or whatever are going to happen. My argument to that is, well, look at Nyla Rose. She's just as big. She's just as powerful facing off against smaller opponents. I don't ever hear anybody that goes up against Nyla Rose saying anything about, oh, she's dangerous. Oh, she doesn't know how to work. She's this, and that. I don't hear any of that coming from Nyla's side. So it's not like Nia Jax can't do it. She just needs more work. I do think that she was put into the main roster much quicker than she should have been. But they were, I'm sure Vince McMahon looked at it as kind of like, oh, like China.
He's probably looking at it as like an Awesome Kong wrestler. That type of monster chick. And here we are, we have it. Let's push her. We need a monster girl.
And how long
Kong is one of the more safer wrestlers we've known. We never hear anything wrong about her. Gail Kim and her are besties, and they wrestle like all the time, and we had great matches. Thus, we can have safe women wrestlers who are huge, and there we go. It's just, they need to teach.
How long has she been on the main roster? Four years?
Nia Jax?
Yeah. Three years? Four years?
She's been like three or four.
No, three or four.
Right. Let's just round it off at 2.5 to 3. 2.5 to 3 years on the main roster, and she still can't cut a clean promo that I feel is legitimate. Like even sounding worse than Ron as a robot on the mic. She's got several different heat issues where she gets heat backstage from injuring other wrestlers. She's just not it. She's not there. And whether she needs to go to an Evolve or somewhere where she can put some time in and not feel the pressure, and get her skills honed, kind of like Drew McIntyre, maybe where he could go off and, kind of rebuild himself and rebrand himself and get himself over. Because everything they're trying to do to get her over is not working.
I'd say let's send her to Florida Pro Wrestling, but they're already in Florida, so we can't send her there. Ohio Valley Wrestling, can we send her there? Is that still a thing?
It's still a thing, but I don't think it's going to be a thing very much for very much longer. I do, like I said, if they do end up picking up Evolve, basically from dying out, that would be a good place that they can use for developmental purposes and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think her going down to some sort of developmental program would help her tremendously, because she could be a good, talent. I'm sure she works her ass off every single day, trying to get better and everything else like that. But it's just whether it's the way some of the other women are taking the bumps or the way that she's delivering it, whatever it may be, it's not safe. Whether it's her fault or whether it's the other person's fault, doesn't matter. It's happening to her on a consistent basis. So it's just kind of she needs more developmental. She needs more, the promo work for sure. Again, like you said, Bill, I don't believe it. Basically at all. It all seems like it's being read off a script. So it's just we'll see what she ends up doing, and if she gets any better. But yeah. I think for this match especially.
Oh, it's awesome.
The throwaway match, Asuka wins for sure. No problem. So, next match on the card, the WWE Championship match between Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley. Bill, we'll start with you. Go ahead. What do you think?
Well, interesting. Interesting enough. I think they definitely have heard a lot of rumbles and rumors that they want to have a long, nice run with McIntyre. I think it'd be smart to do. But they can do this in a way where they can make Bobby Lashley look good in losing, have a good match, have it be a solid match, give it enough time to develop a little bit there. I think that's a great – I think the feud could go on for quite a while. I'd also read somewhere recently that Bobby Lashley wants a dream match with – he wants to do a program with Brock Lesnar. Which
says every year. He wants that, and then they just don't give it to him.
You know what? I think – here's the thing. Remember I said a couple weeks ago I thought this is his time to shine or he's not going to get any more pushes. I think if he can make Drew look just as spectacular as he is as a champion – through a small feud that they're having right now and make and really help build McIntyre's mystique up. And, you know, he's not going to win the belt, I don't think. But I think they might just give him that match as a reward. If he looks good, making McIntyre look good and having a good, solid match, I think. And plus, I love the work that him and MVP are doing together. I think that's top-notch stuff, and they do more of that. Ditch Lana, get her out of the picture, and let those two guys continue some good chemistry they had back even in TNA back in the day. And I think if you can do a good job of really making McIntyre look strong as I think he is and still look good doing it, you know what I mean.
Yeah. If they could reward him with something better to what they did in TNA, then we're definitely right. A great match.
Absolutely. And then you give him, you know, maybe down the road even closer to Mania. You give them that shot at Brock and let those two big freaking pieces of meat go at work, man, because they both have the MMA background. They both have, you know, freaking chiseled, real huge bomb.
Background.
It'd be a great clash between those two. But I think definitely Drew's is going over on this one, in my opinion.
I'm going double count out.
Oh,
count.
That would suck, but
for a draw. No, because this will lead to better matches. This will be a good double count out match.
It's possible
to have a good double count out, guys, and this will be it. And then next pay-per-view, which is Extreme Rules, they'll have an extreme gimmick match, which will be great. And then SummerSlam will come around, and then they'll have their blow off match, and they'll go into the sunset with a great rivalry ending. So two big men. See, I wrote it down. There you go.
So that goes to what we talked about last week with long-term booking. You know,
long-term booking right there. A long-term booking rivalry.
Yeah, that does sound good. That would be nice too.
But I would take that. I would not be mad at that. To be completely honest, I would not be mad at a double count.
Bobby Lashley hold the belt for 30 days, and then he loses it. How about that? There's nothing wrong with him holding the belt for 30 days. He earns a title run, a major title run. It's been 13 years since that WrestleMania with the Battle of the Billionaires. He deserves one damn title run.
Yeah.
That's all.
I think Lashley at some point they're going to give him – and I kind of go with what Bill's going to say. It depends on how he does – now with, you know, with McIntyre, how he makes him look good and all that kind of stuff will depend that in the future, a couple months down the road, you'll actually see Bobby Lashley with the belt. You know, whether it's a Universal title or WWE title, either way, you know, he's going to have a belt at some point. You know, so we'll definitely keep an eye on it. I hope it's good. Nick, I think if this does end up in a double count out, you're going to get two points for that.
I agree.
That's true. I win the whole predictions, and I'm the greatest predictor of all time. ESPN should hire me. I should be right there next to Tim Tebow making predictions.
That would be some TV right there.
Ooh, man. Can you imagine that?
Tim Tebow and Nick? Oh, my God.
Can we have our own first take? Ooh, my God. That'd be a dream. I used to not like Tim Tebow, but now I do.
Your show
would be Pardon the Interruption.
No, I need more than 2 or 3 minutes on a segment. I need like 10 minutes. You know that Tim T was going to go on his spiritual rants, so I can't just talk for 2.5 minutes.
So we're going off the last match of the night, or what we think will probably be the main event or of the evening. Edge versus Randy Orton. In what's being labeled as greatest match of all time. Now, for me, obviously, I'm going to go Edge. I mean, my heart tells me Edge. My mind kind of tells me that it's going to be Randy, and they might kind of keep it going even farther, which, again, I would have no. This is one of those matches, it doesn't matter to me who comes out on top. If Edge comes out on top and it kind of ends that feud and he goes and has another great feud with somebody else, cool. If Randy wins and their feud continues, keep it going. Keep it interesting, because this is, in my opinion, this is the most interesting thing that's happening on WWE right now. Edge and Randy Orton. That's it. That's the only things that are going right now. Rollins is, Rollins and Ray, it's okay. I like the whole concept that has come, the whole Monday Night Messiah and all that kind of stuff, how he thinks is a savior. I like the gimmick. I like the concept. Just, it's got to be with the right people.
It's the worst headline of any match in the last 10 years, the greatest wrestling match ever. That, you're setting the bar too high, and it's easily going to break down. It's not going to be the greatest wrestling match.
I was like, this match definitely, if you're going to label it as the greatest match ever.
You should never put that on a match. Okada Omega didn't. It just turned out that way, and people call it that.
It's just, I hope it doesn't get too, like, gimmicky, too overbooked.
I bet you it's going to be the worst match of the year.
No, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say it's going to be the worst match. It's going to be a good match.
It's going to be the most disappointing match because of that label.
Well, it'll probably get to the point where, people are going to definitely have that argument afterwards. Was it the greatest match of all time? Chances are it probably won't be. But who knows? Maybe it does turn into
whole 99% chance it's not going to be the.
If it's not the greatest match of all time, it could be. It could potentially be one of the greatest matches of all time. Possibly.
No.
But I'm going with Edge. Nick, where are we going with you? Who are you going with?
I'm going to go with Lita. Lita's going to come out of nowhere and just RKO somebody. I don't even know.
Take this seriously, man. Pick a guy.
I'll go with Orton.
Orton? Okay.
It's a singles match. Oh, no.
Bill, where are we going?
All right, two things. I don't mean to segue too much, but two things. Number one, you want to see what could possibly want to be in the talks for greatest match of all time. Last night's SmackDown, Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles match was 40 minutes of brilliance. Beautiful match. It's sad this booking happened the way they did it. The way they've tagged this as the greatest wrestling match is just so much to live up to. I agree. It could be maybe in the discussions if they just nail it at every turn. The storytelling's been perfect. We've gotten one of the best Randy Ortons in this feud I've seen in over 10 years, and the promos have been amazing. Edge is a great. What he did on Monday night was showing him and Christian and the whole. Do you guys watch that? Did you see that?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it. Yeah.
When Christian's challenging, I don't think he can win. The whole thing. It's just been a great build up, but the problem is they have to perform tomorrow night, and it has to be spot on. Now, could two guys do it like them on their caliber? I think they could, but. You get everybody's expectations up here, and even if you have this match, which is still a great match, it's not what you said it was going to be as the greatest match of all time. So unless it really just supersedes even our wildest expectations, it's going to be not the greatest match of all time. Willie, I think it'd be great. I think Edge does win. If Randy wins, then they could definitely go into a. Like you said, blow off, the walk-off final, see who really gets the top of this feud. This feud is so good. I don't want it to end. But this tagline of the greatest wrestling match of all time is just, it's garbage. We're going to wake up Monday morning feeling like we got bamboozled because it's just not going to,
With them labeling it that way, when you label pretty much any type of match as being one of the greatest matches of all time, you have to have every aspect of the match being perfect, including crowd. including fans. That's not something they have. Yeah, they have, you know, a group of superstars or whatever around the ring. That's not the same as, you know, 17,000 people in an arena.
They're getting paid to do reactions. They're getting paid to react. It's really stupid.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's not that. You definitely know between the superstars who's, like, meant to be the heel, meant to be the, you know, the face type of thing. You know, but with the crowd, you know, they have their favorites. They're going to cheer on who they're going to cheer on. You know, so having them, you know, inside of the match definitely makes it, you know, that much better. You know, but since we don't have that, that's one of those key aspects of being able to label a match as, you know, one of the greatest matches of all time. You have to have the crowd reaction in there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, exactly. it just doesn't feel the same.
Can we give a star rating to this match? I think that's what's the more important thing, since they labeled it the greatest wrestling match of all time, is what will the star rating be? And I want to go last. So,
I think potentially. It's all potential at this point. You know, it's all about...
What do you predict will be the star rating?
They'll probably give it... Meltzer, if he's going to give it anything, I think probably the most he'll give is maybe a 4. Maybe a 4. It's because of the whole expectations. Everybody sees the tagline, and anything short of it being the literal greatest match of all time it's just going to get shit on, you know, picked apart and everything else like that. So I think at the most, if they're going to give it any, you know, type of real praise, and again, I hope I'm wrong. I hope it's a 5-star match. I hope it's a 5.5, 6-star, whatever the hell it is you want to give it type of match. Sure. I hope it is that way. I was like, but realistically, with the lack of crowd reaction and, you know, it just – and the billing of it, it just I don't think they should have done that. I think they should have left that tagline to be determined by the masses.
The worst tagline in history.
You know, so – but I think, yeah, at the most a 4. Worst
of all. You know – considering Monday night, they said the words "the greatest wrestling match ever" 17 times in a 3-hour show, says that they are just desperate for this match to be more than a 4. If you're looking at Meltzer's ratings, for example, anything less than a 5 is not it's not even going to be in the conversation of being one of the greatest matches of all time, let alone the greatest match of all time.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be a 4 at best, and I think it's going to be a big letdown. If you tell me you have made a, you grill a steak on your barbecue, and somebody come over and tell me it's the greatest steak I'm ever going to have taste, and I taste it and it's good, you're going to let a lot of people down. You've got to really produce the greatest wrestling match of all time, and as great as these two are, absolute Hall of Famers, absolutely great wrestlers, but just a bogus, lame ass tagline for a match. We're the greatest wrestling match of all time, my ass.
Go ahead, Nick.
3. Just 3. That's all I'm giving it.
I can see that.
That's all I'm going to give it. I'm going to give it the lowest possible score for them to
start just for showing up, so.
No, that's what I give it.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have come to so that's our backlash predictions. We have Hardy versus Sheamus. Bill and myself going with Hardy, Nick going with Sheamus. All of us are picking Apollo Crews. 2 out of the 3 of us are picking Edge over Randy Orton, as well as 4-star for 3-star. Bailey and Sasha, Nick and myself and Bill goes with the Iconics. Miz and Morrison, Nick and Bill is going with that. I'm going with Braun. All of us are unanimously going with Asuka. And then for the last match, McIntyre versus Lashley, being Bill picked McIntyre, while Nick going for the 2-pointer, the double count now. Ladies and gentlemen, we have gotten to the part of this show where is, I don't know about you guys, but I honestly think we should probably start making this its own thing as soon as possible. Whether we start that next week or the week before that, we'll have a conversation off air about that, obviously. But now is the point of the show where I give the reins to Big Nick here for the segment of the Ring Psychology Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the rematch. Nick, take it away.
Well, arguably, we're going all the way back to 2007, arguably one of the weirdest and uncreative years in wrestling history, but lots of shit happened, and we're going to go to Backlash, which, if you look at it, it's a very unique pay-per-view with things all over the place and how matches were built. It wasn't too high prowess, but the wrestling matches were to top-notch, even with those issues. And we're going to focus on the main event of Backlash 2007, which was a fatal four-way between John Cena, the champion, Shawn Michaels, Edge, and Randy Orton. Now, for some context, Edge and Randy Orton were somewhat still a tag team at that moment, rated RKO. They were on their way out of it with Edge just a week before, or a week after this pay-per-view. He went to get the Money in the Bank from Mr. Kenny and then cashed in on that Friday for Undertaker. So his main push came a week later. This was just a moment in time. Randy Orton was still finding his groove years after he was given the belt and then taken away from him in a matter of a month. And his whole Legend Killer gimmick was still being built. Shawn Michaels and Cena were in a high profile feud, and it was all about Cena still proving himself to the company a bit, even though he was given top booking. And this was in the midst of his strongest run. He held the belt for a year, and this was in the middle of it. He held it for another 3 or 4 months after this. And he was on a strong run. He looked unbeatable. And even though he won the match by surprise because he got super kicked and just landed on, I believe it was Randy Orton, perfectly for the pin, it was still a great, well-rounded match with all top competitors wanting to show that they are the best workers in the company, if not the industry. And let's just begin with our first topics of the rematch, or first category of the rematch. Most rewatchable scene, guys. And I'll just point out my first. It's not the main scene I'd go to right away, but it's one of my favorites. It's when Edge's chair shot to Orton. I just miss a good chair shot. And that one right there was just like, whoa!
Yep. Here's the thing. I don't really remember too much about that match other than, you know, like you said, the surprise, you know, ending, you know, Shawn Michaels, you know, super kicking the shit out of John into the pin, which to me, I guess you could look at it as that's a good rewatchable moment because storyline wise, it played really well.
Yeah. Shawn was real upset about that.
Yeah. So, and then everything else that happened after that, it just kind of fell into place. So yeah, I think if I was going to choose it, probably that ending right there, would probably be it for me.
Yep. Bill?
I can watch that chair shot over and over and over again. It is something of beauty. That would be my favorite. That chair shot was just,
it sucks that they didn't do anything on the table. Edge ruined it, and then, but at least he came back with the chair shot to Orton. But they should have came back to that table. I don't know.
Yes, but they didn't. Should have, could have, would have. They didn't.
I know. It would have been
talk about what I could put on a loop and watch is just that chair shot. Just absolutely, absolutely. It was beautiful. Well done.
That makes me miss chair shots to the head. We need more chair shots to the head.
No.
More chair shots to the head.
They are. We'll call Vince and tell him.
There we go. So before the finish where Cena was super kicked onto Orton. Everyone was doing their finishers, so you knew at that point this match is going to end, which may have hurt a bit, but it was still just a great stretch of I RKO you, I spear you, did he attitude adjust or STFU or FU? I don't know what his finisher had a different name at that moment. I can't remember. Did he FU somebody at that moment? Did he FU Orton? I believe he did. And that's what ended up being super kicked, and then he fell. Yeah, so it was just cool to see everyone just do their finisher at a perfect exact moment.
I agree.
Yep. Yeah, one of my favorite things also was just the old look for Backlash. How they designed it. I mean, they should do more of that. They just got their ordinary look. We need to go back to where even the pay-per-views had some character to it and not just, here you go, it's on our video package.
Yeah, the stage
was rewatchable. I wish they would like that still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They need to bring back the stage. They need to bring back the specialized stages for these pay-per-views. I thought they were pretty creative and fun.
They gave it a uniqueness.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Give it an extra layer of fun for me.
Extra layer.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go to what aged the best. I'm going to say the amount of DX gear in this match. Holy cow. These people loved DX in 2006 and 7. They all had those little glow sticks and t-shirts. It's like, holy cow, there's too much.
I think what aged well is... During these times, and this is purely my opinion, during these times when the overbooking and like the fatal four ways and stuff like that kind of, they were in themselves still kind of unique. You know, yeah. Triple threats and fatal four ways at that, you know, going through that point, they were starting to do more of them, but it was still kind of one of those, like, if somebody said, oh, it's a fatal four way or triple threat, people were like, oh, shit. You know, this is gonna be something good. You know, we got all, you know, these four superstars, these three superstars in there. You know, so I think when you look back on it, I guess you can put it in a category of didn't really age well, the fact on how they executed Fatal Four Ways and stuff, but the pure enjoyment at that point, the uniqueness of it and stuff, for me, that was kind of something that stuck out and I guess aged well in the fact that if you can go back and look at it, it was, you know, appreciative, you know, so.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Fatal four ways and three way matches, they've lost their meaning. When you heard that back in the day, four guys are going to be in a ring all the time, it meant something. It had gravitas. It had push to it. You knew it was going to be something big. Now it's just like, you just throw them out like candy. Hey, here you get, and like Oprah in a car. You get a four-way, and you get a four-way, and you get a four-way. The cool thing was, I think what aged well is the chemistry between these guys. All you can watch that, and really, it's one of those matches where if you were going to teach, if you could even teach chemistry, if you're going to teach it in a wrestling class, you could say these four guys knew how to interact with each other. They knew how to make each other look good. And this is a situation where they all, you know, they all looked, they like you're saying, they all got their finishes in. They looked, their chemistry together is what impressed me. And I think for me, still kind of popped and shown.
What also was great was they were able to all work together. No one was above the other. They were all just bouncing off each other like, all right, it's your turn. All right, it's our turn to do something together. All right, chair shot time, okay? There we go. No one went above or was faltering at any moment. Randy looked great, even though next month that's where he got back on the Legend Killer status. Edge looked great. Shawn looked great. Cena looked great. I mean, no one felt like they were having an issue. But there were some things that aged horribly during this match. And before the match even started, it was Lawler and Jim Ross saying there was a texting survey for who was going to win this match. And it's like, wow, that is really something of the times. No one does texting anymore. Everyone voted for Cena. He had like 50% of the votes. And I imagine it was all kids on their flip phones from back in the day.
Texting that number, yeah. Some things that didn't age well.
The video package was shit.
See, I guess if you want to talk, I mean, we say that we miss the uniqueness of the stages, you know, for each, you know, pay-per-view. But I guess in WWE's opinion, those didn't age too well because you don't really see them anymore. The only stages that you really see that are done up are SummerSlam and WrestleMania. It's hardly even done anything for Royal Rumble anymore. You know, it looks kind of generic in that sense. So it's just even Survivor Series, just all, everything other than SummerSlam and WrestleMania, you know, it doesn't have that feel. It doesn't have that uniqueness of, oh, this is a pay-per-view. You know, you go to those pay-per, you see it on it, oh, this is just like another Raw. This is just like another SmackDown. And in a way, they kind of present it that way. The matches that they had, we just went over the Backlash card. You know, it's just certain things that they do, they make it, you know, seem like, yeah, it's a pay-per-view, but it's not something that you necessarily need to worry about or need to watch to be able to. It's just basically an extra day of having Raw or an extra day of having SmackDown. So I think when you want to kind of go back to bringing that uniqueness to pay-per-views, yeah, that definitely didn't age well because they don't do it anymore, really. So that's my opinion on that.
My opinion of what didn't age well is what I was saying earlier. You know, if I told you could have top shelf Black Label filet mignon every week.
Did we change the channel? Are we talking about food now?
No, just listen here, hear me out. If I told you could have your favorite dish, the one you love and crave all the time, you'd be like, yeah. And about a month or two, you'd be like, I'm good, I'm done. The Fatal 4-Way has not aged well because they shove it on every time they can. They get a whim. They want to get more wrestlers involved. It's not even built up properly. They just book them that day, it seemed like. And the four-way matches haven't aged well. This is one that showed how you could really do it. Make it a special event. Make it something with some top tier guys. Not just throw a bunch of jabronis in there and just say we're gonna have a four way so they can have TV time. So I think the four way matches have not aged well because they don't mean anything. There's no, like I said earlier, there's no gravitas. There's no, oh my God, this means something. It don't mean anything anymore. Yeah. Anybody can have them. It just didn't age well.
What also didn't age well was Edge's entrance. He didn't have fireworks. It was weird to watch. It's like, what? Oh, that's right. It came a little later. That's just weird to see. He did this, but nothing was going. It's like,
nothing.
This is odd.
Someone missed your spot.
The fireworks just fit well with Edge. And I remember when he first did it, it was when he won the World Heavyweight title 2 weeks later. And he just looked great. It's like, wow, this guy's a superstar. But with him in that moment in this match, it's like,
You watch it back now and you kind of go like Bill said, is like, did somebody in the fireworks department miss their mark? Like, is the timer not on? Like, what's happening with all this here?
Yeah.
It's a little, you kind of wait for the fireworks. And you're like, oh, wait, this was the time you didn't have them. That's right.
Another thing that just didn't work was the volume for the entrances. It didn't sound like the crowd was into it. I think they turned up the music for the entrances, but they turned down the crowd. And it made it seem like none of the people cared for these wrestlers. They didn't care for Cena, Edge, all of them. Just like, am I the only one that's intrigued by what's about to happen? They turned it back up when the match started. You hear these kids and adults just cheering, Cena sucks, let's go Cena. But in the beginning, nothing was going on. I was like, well, what happened here, guys? Did you forget what to do? But the thing that did not, that aged the worst, was Edge and Orton's friendship. Obviously, it took 13 years, and now they hate each other. And now we're back at Backlash with them wrestling each other once more. It's just gone sour, guys. I wish them the best.
Okay.
All right. On to the next topic. What if recasting Couch? Who could we have placed in this match to make it better? And obviously, the scenario for WrestleMania would have been different if Triple H did not get injured. It would have been him facing Cena for the belt in the main event again. But he got injured. Thus, Shawn Michaels comes in. So imagine if Cena or Triple H won that match at WrestleMania. Then we would have had this fatal four-way, possibly, but without Michaels and Triple H. That's what I would have seen. And Shawn Michaels would have been having a feud with somebody else, maybe the Great Khali.
I'm thinking it's really hard to replace these four guys because at that time, these four guys were pretty much the faces of WWE. Yeah, so it's just kind of – it's hard to think of who could have possibly replaced him at that point.
Well, I think it's true that Triple H would have at least been somewhere around this match or in the match because of if the injury that came about. If it wasn't for that, he'd be there.
Yeah, Triple H, I guess, is, like you said, that's somebody who can – possibly play a role in this whole thing, but other than that, it's other than Triple H, I can't think of any.
Was Kurt Angle still with the company at this time?
No, he was in TNA.
He was TNA. Yes. Well, I would have dragged his butt from TNA and put him in there instead of Cena. That would be the only one I could see being interchangeable. Maybe put the You Suck chant in there with these three other three guys, but you got the four perfect guys. Those guys, like you said, they were the workhorses at that time. They were the top stars, the top shelf. I think.
Looking at is Cena's three out of five most important rivalries of his career,
right,
whether
there.
It was at the moment, before, or after. Like, Shawn Michaels was his most important rival at that moment. Orton came later, and Edge was in the past, and a little bit after as well. Those were three of his five most important rivals, all in the one ring for him at that moment. Maybe have an elimination chamber with all Cena's rivals, with Brock Lesnar and CM Punk in it as well, and we're just going to have the best time with Cena. But that's... Wait, but ooh, there we go. Let's get rid of Edge and place Brock Lesnar. We're going to be having suplexes all day long.
I don't like it.
That's okay. This is my show. I like it. If there's no one else we can think of to recast in this match, let's move on to half-assed internet research. And I found something quite interesting. For three straight years, Edge was in the main event with Cena. In 2006, 2000, oh wait, no, I'm wrong. No, they main evented three backlashes together. The first one was in 2006, that being with Triple H. 2007, this match, and then 2009 with just the two of them in the Last Man Standing match. So they have their own trilogy at Backlash, which is really weird.
Go ahead, keep going.
What the fuck are you doing?
Cramp.
Yeah, cramp in the ribs. Go ahead, keep going.
But yeah, so they have their own trilogy, which is something we should keep note of for if we ever talk about the history of Backlash. Also, Triple H owns Backlash. He's main evented more times than anyone else, which is really sad. But that's as much research as I found on this match. Let's talk about who's the Apex Mount. Was this anyone's Apex Mount at this moment?
I can't think of anyone. I think they all killed it. I think it was a great match, but I kept thinking who's Apex Mountain could have been.
Possibly in the realm for Cena.
Cena's the one I was thinking of. It possibly. I mean, how long ago was this? It was
2007.
So yeah, that would probably be maybe he got some rub off these guys, you know, especially with some of the guys that have been around for a bit longer. I don't know. It's hard to really pinpoint, but maybe Cena.
Gentlemen, I apologize. This is JP. I apologize for the technical difficulties that we had at the end of this show. But hopefully coming in next week, we'll have a better show for you guys. Well, not so much as a better show, but less technical difficulties, I should say. But yeah, once we come back in next week, we're going to have another show for you guys. Thank you guys for listening to the Ring Psychology Podcast, episode 1. Really appreciate you guys. Love you guys. Thank you. And I can't get enough, really. And we'll see you guys next week. See you later.